All right. So, Perek Gimel, what do we got? Questions, comments here? Yeah.
Why wouldn't Mordechai bow?
Why wouldn't he bow? Number one question. We have to figure it out. Good. What else? What do you got?
Is Ahasuerus so quick to just like that's going against the Jews?
Very good. What's Ahasuerus thinking? Does he even know what's going on?
Also, like, he doesn't gain anything. He's not gaining anything from this.
Right, why do this? How does this help you? Good. What else? Yeah.
Right. What's with the pur, the lot?
Pur, yeah. Purim. Weird name for the holiday. What's with that? We'll have to discuss that as well. Good. Guys are on the ball. Anything else? I think there's one more major question right in the beginning.
Why did he promote Haman?
Okay, good. Let's start with that. Why was Haman appointed to a high position? So first of all, we don't meet Haman until this parak. Okay, all the little kids in shul waiting anxiously so they can like scream. Hey, what's going on? Well, Perek and Aleph and Bet, they're going nuts, right? Finally, Gimel, Haman, yeah, okay. Everybody makes a lot of noise. What is this? What's going on here? So according to Chazal, very interesting idea. This was a new position. After the assassination plot against Ahasuerus, Ahasuerus now becomes very paranoid. And he refused to leave the palace. For all sorts of security reasons, we'll see later on. People don't come into the room without getting permission. He's nervous. And therefore, he now appoints a person to be his fill-in. Any sort of royal ceremony that needs a high official, the Bimkom king, you know, the replacement king, will now come and he'll be the monarch for the day. They'll be at all the different ceremonies. And that is Haman's job. Now, clearly a position like this would arouse jealousy amongst all the other people, especially since we never heard of him before this. But it didn't really matter to the megalomaniac, you know, Haman. He was like thrilled to be in this position. And great. Haman now has his job. Now, the main question, as you asked, was why wouldn't Mordechai bow down to him? And if you look at the pasuk, that's exactly what it says. Look at the pasuk in Hebrew. Pasuk Bet towards the end of it. Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachaveh. How did the English translate it? He would not bow. Not that he didn't bow down. He would not bow. He would not. Why not? It's not like he didn't. I didn't see him one time. It was a mistake, you know? He would not bow down. Why not?
Especially since it might like be a danger to him and other people too.
Good, right? If we worried before that Esther, if she would do something wrong, there could be backlash against, you know, all of Jewish people. Why would Mordechai take the same risk and have backlash against all of Am Yisrael? If you recall, we learned Shimshon. We said one of the reasons why Shimshon went undercover to fight against the Plishtim is because he wanted to be backlash against Am Yisrael. His actions would then cause maybe he'd win a battle, but they lose the war because they take it out on the Jews. So here now, isn't it possible that Mordechai's actions would have backlash on the Jewish people? Which it did.
There's a reason right? Why Haman hated the Jews so much.
So we'll have to see. We'll figure that out. But I'm asking, why wouldn't Mordechai bow down? What's his reason?
Wasn't it because there's Avodah Zarah on Haman's...
Okay.
Like, no, he looked at himself as like that or something?
Let's see. Look, Pasuk Dalet has a strange answer. Pasuk Dalet... How come he won't bow down? And they said, oh, because he's Jewish. How's that an answer?
They said? Who's they?
The guards. He asked the guards, "Did you go find out what's that guy? Why's that guy standing up all the, over there?" They came back like, he won't bow down to you because he's Jewish. He's the only one there. Not bowing down. So like, why not? So one answer.
How could him just walk away?
Good.
Why does he have to stand there?
Excellent. Excellent. Let's see. So one answer is in Esther Rabbah. Esther Rabbah is the Midrash Rabbah, right? When you say Midrash Rabbah, so we have like, it's about Midrash Rabbah, it's Gabracious Rabbah, Shemos Rabbah. This is Esther Rabbah. And it says, Haman wore a Avodah Zarah around his neck. And if so, it's very interesting. He now has a new position. Many different dictators and monarchs surrounded themselves with religious council. throughout history. Mm-hmm. They had their ear that was telling them, Torquemada, all these people have the Inquisition, have a pogrom, do this, do that, sometimes against the Jews, sometimes not to the Jews. But, you know, this religion, you have in Iran, you know, the Ayatollah Khomeini, right? So you have, and it would seem that Haman now fills this role. According to the Midrash, he now is serving a religious role, this Avodah Zarah role. It's a new position. Okay? And if so, now we come to the counter question. Well, then every Jew should have stood there and not bowed down. If this was Avodah Zarah, so it's one of the big three.
But technically, Haman saying bow down to me, not the Avodah Zarah.
According to this, it's the Avodah Zarah that he's wearing around his neck.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Maybe that.
According to this idea. And if so, if it is Avodah Zarah, then there was no heter for anyone to bow down. Yarog v'al yavor. You're not allowed to worship Avodah Zarah. And even do it superficially. Now let us worship it superficially. So, if this is what's done, bowing down is considered usur, even if it wouldn't be the way that this particular Avodah Zarah is worshipped. Everything, that's a way of showing kavod. Every single Jew should have stood there in defiance. You could say some Jews were assimilated. You could say, goes back to what you said, Jacob, that maybe those Jews who cared made sure to get off the street when Haman was coming down. They hear Haman's coming down. They ran into their shops. They went into the bathroom, you know, whatever.
How many Jews were hanging around the palace?
Yeah, well, I don't think he just walked in the palace. I think he decided to go on a parade every day. You know? So you find, you hear, Haman's coming, quick, get out of the way. So we don't have to get into that situation. And if that's true, so why the Haman? So then, it's a little bit strange, but yes, you have to say, Mordechai is the only one who defiantly stood there, and everyone else either ran away, or they couldn't care less about Judaism and bowed down. But it doesn't sound that way from the Pesukim. Yeah.
So, like, okay, so let's say, right, someone puts a gun, to my head, whatever, and says, if you don't bow down to this
idol, I'm
going to
kill you.
I'm going to kill him.
Oh.
I'm going to kill him.
That's a good question.
Are you allowed to...
That's a good question.
Well, what do you do?
That's a good question.
What? Okay.
Yeah, it's a good question. Okay, it's not clear.
Well, that's probably...
Right, so you could say that maybe over here other people's lives are in jeopardy, but right now we don't see any threat. I don't say it necessarily as a threat.
It could be to the threat.
It could be.
Especially if his job is to report... Like,
it could be. It could be. It's definitely a possibility. And then the question would be, so why did Mordechai do it? I'm just saying, whichever way we say, someone's going to be in the right, and someone's going to be wrong. It's either Mordechai or Bnei Yisrael. So according to this thing, he's worrying about his arm.
Maybe Mordechai was taking, by him not bowing down, he knew that he should be killed for now. He's taking a rabbi Bnei Yisrael. He's taking a punishment for Bnei Yisrael.
Unless what happens is, will happen is that he's going to take it out on the Jewish people. We'll get to that. Second idea, the Vilna Gaon says, this is what one of you just said, is that Haman, it went to his head. He considered himself a Zara. The power went straight to his head, and he considered himself to be a god, the way Paro considered himself to be a god. He considered himself to be a god, and that's why it was Usher. Once again, the same question. If it was Usher, I understand Mordechai, I don't understand the other people.
Just because, if he's telling people if he's saying bow down to me, just because he considers himself a god, why is that a void zone? Like, anyone could just say, oh my god.
Well, you say that about any idol that someone... I made this idol yesterday, and today I decided...
People pray to the idol.
And people maybe pray to him. I'm just saying, if he declares himself... It's no difference between declaring an idol of Avodah Zarah or declaring a person of Avodah Zarah if it's accepted as Avodah Zarah. This is the Vilna Gaon's idea.
Rashi says
the same idea? Okay. Or you could say, which I think it fits in better, it's not Avodah Zarah. It's done out of kavod. Haman now got this new position. He's milking it for all it's worth. Oh, I'm the, replacement king. Bow down to me now. We see that later on. All he wants to do is wear the royal clothes and go on the royal horse. He loves this, right? So he's like, bow down to me. And it's out of kavod. And if so, would it be permitted to bow down to him?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We see in the Chumash, the Avos bow down to people out of kavod. And in England, it's totally permissible to bow down when the queen comes by. Okay? It's okay. It's okay. It's not a vote of Zara. It's a sign of respect. You're allowed to show respect, right? Also, Yaakov bows down to Esav. And
if you're saying that Haman didn't do anything wrong yet, then there's no reason for them to, like, I'm saying that they could do it out of respect because they could see
right.
the high royalty.
Right. Now the question then is, I understand why Bnei Yisrael bowed down. Why wouldn't Mordechai? If, after all, it is only out of respect, why wouldn't Mordechai bow down to him?
Well, I heard something like Haman was like his slave or something.
Okay, that's this whole Midrash thing. Yes, yeah. That maybe if you have time at the end, I'll get into that.
Fine.
But right now, you know me, I prefer more shot stuff.
Because he probably didn't respect him. Therefore, not bowing down.
But it's not the person, it's the position. All right? In the United States right now, most people don't respect Trump, but you have to respect the president. Right? So, that's being recorded. But okay. I'm just saying, it's not the person. Ivanka's going to get this tape. Okay, fine. It's not the person, it's the position. If he's right now, he is the replacement king, so then you should bow down. I'm saying, you might not respect the queen in England. Certainly not some of her family members. But if it's royalty, it's royalty. And yeah, you're allowed to show kavod. So this is what I understand. He felt we have a simulated society. And it's back to what you were saying, Jacob. He felt, I have to draw a line and stop kissing up to the secular society. Jews were now like, oh, now we're going to show kavod. That's not where kavod should be shown. And he takes a stand, not going to bow down to some replacement monarch. If that's true, I can understand why the people blame Mordechai for their misfortune. Right? And they do. They get upset at Mordechai because, like, really? You had to make a show? What was that all about? Now there's a death decree on us because you decided that you wouldn't bow down to this guy? When Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov had no problem doing it, you're better than they are. Now, thank you very much. But the Maral says, Mordechai felt, I cannot be passive in the face of evil. That will cause more harm than good. People say, well, Mordechai has no problem bowing down to him, so I can learn to be just like him. Because look, he gives kavod. It's kavod to him. We mentioned the other day, this is round two between Shaul and Amalek. Shaul didn't finish off Amalek. Mordechai was associated with Shaul. Haman associated with Amalek. We're now about to begin round two. And it was his hatred for Mordechai that led to his downfall. It was too petty for Haman to just kill Mordechai. Anybody could have him killed. But I'm now in a position of such high authority, just to kill Mordechai would be like ridiculous. And therefore, he's going to kill the entire nation. And when he kills Mordechai, how's he going to kill him? On the gallows, how high? 50 amos high, so that everyone should be able to see from miles around. And not only that, I can't wait till morning to go speak to the king about this. I got to go in the middle of the night, which we'll get to, which drives the king a little bit crazy. Haman's hatred for Mordechai led to his downfall. Right? It's very interesting. He cut off his nose to spite his face. Everything that he did backfired because of this. He could have killed Mordechai, it would have been done with. But no, it had to be elaborate. It had to be a big deal. Right? This is what happens. Sometimes people do that out of their hatred, they mess themselves up. I don't remember the exact years, but when the polio vaccine was founded, I think it was in the early 60s, by Salk and Sabin, two Jews. Now the whole world, hardly anyone has polio, right? Because we have a polio vaccination. Jordan refused to use it. Why? Because it was discovered by two Jews. So people were dropping dead in Jordan from polio because they wouldn't use, you know, right? So it's like this like idea of like, oh, as I saw once some person write this article about, you know, the BDS. Oh, you really want to do BDS? Stop using your enlisted all these Israeli products. Says, you know, so you get by now, you know? So, yeah.
Name like any like major like anti-Semitic, like Omar, like
right.
whoever, and their websites are made by like an Israeli company. Like on their website, you scroll down, it says like made by Wix, and it's an Israeli, it's like one of Israel's like top
companies. Right, and they probably don't, I'm sure they don't realize that they're using it. Right.
It's due for Bala Palestine, also have that.
Yeah. Anyway, what's the significance of the lottery? So what do you think?
We leave them at the bottom.
Okay. Goyim were then very fatalistic. Okay? There's predetermined, there's a good day, it's a lucky day. That's why Judaism says we're not into superstition. Oh, Friday the 13th, I don't want to do anything on Friday the 13th, you know? So we're not into that. But Goyim felt certain days were auspicious and certain days were not. And therefore, he did a lottery to determine what is the best day to do my plan. And Judaism believes that we determine our own destiny. I was asked to say something, a message for, like, you know, for the alumni. That guy, I asked you if Rami Rabin came in. So this is an idea that came to my head. I was thinking about this. On the one hand, this is an idea that I always, like, heard, have it in my notes. This last idea I don't have in my notes. This is just something I thought about recently. We actually do have a lottery in Tanakh. In Sefer Yeshua, we had a lottery to divide up the land of Eretz Yisrael. But the difference was, let's say you chose, you know, let's say Shevet Dan. You choose and you pull down, what did it say? Oh, along the coast. But once they got the geographical location, how much was determined by the size of the Shevet. So it was a rough idea. They didn't shove a huge Shevet into a small thing because that's what he drew out. But, you know, you got the piece of land depending on your size. But where was determined by the lottery. So I thought maybe this is the idea of Purim. That's why maybe we call the holiday Purim. There's, again, this just thought that's coming into my head recently. Haven't, like, fine-tuned it. But I think it's like this. We have a Gemara that says, Kol b'dei shemayim chutz mi'irat shemayim. Most things that happen to you are predetermined. What you're going to look like, family you're going to be born into, all that types of, the intelligence that you have. It's all the health that you have. It's your DNA. It's all predetermined. But what you do with that, that's up to us. So that the geographical location, that's the lottery. That's like, I was born into this family. I got this DNA. I was born in this country. Right? Now what you do, that's up to you. Haman was like, all right, I would have loved to kill him today. This was in Nisan. I have to wait 12 months till Adar because that's what the lottery said. We're not like that. We don't say, well, that's what it says. We say, okay, this is the hand I was dealt. Now what am I going to do with that? I have to do the most that I can do with whatever capabilities I have. That's what Mordechai and Esther do. And they galvanize Am Yisrael to get involved as well. And that I think, is why we call it Purim. That yes, there are certain things that are determined. But not everything. And it's maybe that 10% that makes all the difference in the world. Right? Granted, like DNA and the family and all the background. But now what? The decisions, they're my decisions. Right? What decisions am I making? Right? Where am I putting my efforts? That's up to me. That's the Yirat Shemayim. Right? And that's what makes us different. Not just that we don't believe in lottery. We do have lottery. There are certain things that are predetermined for us. But now what? Now what do we do? How do we adjust? When I spoke about the Holocaust, I quoted Rav Soloveitchik saying, the question in tragedy is not to ask why, but what now? Right? What now? Right? What do I do now? So I think that maybe also is a little bit of, you talk about messages that we get from the Purim story, I think is another important message. I haven't bounced this off anyone, I'm bouncing off you guys. You can tell me what you think. I don't know. This is an idea. I haven't seen it anywhere. Just
cool idea.
Thinking about it. Anyway, now, how does Haman keep his true intentions hidden from Ahasuerus? Propaganda. He uses very good. He uses all sorts of archetype, you know, anti-Semitic rhetoric. That's for sure. Lots of propaganda, but he never mentions the country either. Mm. Right? Yeshno Amachad. There's certain people. So why didn't he say the name of the people? Why didn't he say, I want to kill the Jews?
Maybe people would have been like, no. Actually saying your name.
But right now I'm talking about, he's supposed to Ahasuerus. Why not tell Ahasuerus?
Because
Ahasuerus didn't want the Jews to cry out.
Well, whatever country it is or nation it is, they're going to cry out.
No, in the sense that he'd seen history. He knew that when the Jews cry,
God listens to their feelings. Okay, so you want to give a religious answer. That Ahasuerus, I'm not saying it's a bad answer, that Ahasuerus actually understood the power of Jews.
There's a thing about that, when they went to the Babel, that there were guards and officers that were told, if you see anyone crying, kill them.
Okay. Okay, that's clearly a Midrash and not a Pasuk. I'm just saying, I'm not saying that's a wrong answer. It's true, one of my friends pointed out to me, we say in Shir HaMalos, sometimes we Jews don't recognize how great we are, the Goyim see before us. Say, Az Yomru Bagoyim, Higdil Ashot, wait, how does it say? Shir HaMalos, Az Yomales, Scholpino, Shinarino, Az Yomru Bagoyim, Higdil Ashot, Lasotim Eile, Goyim, and say, look how great God is with them. Higdil Hashem lasot imanu. Then after the Goyim said that we're great, we say, oh, Higdil Hashem lasot imanu. Look how good God is to us. We didn't realize that. So as long as we do, the Goyim may be even more attuned to how special we are than we are. There's something to that. Tzvi Sat was telling me, he goes back in the summer, he does his job with his brother, with the air conditioning. It's this Chinese guy, he talks all the time, you Jews, you're the smartest people in the world. I sent my son to become a Jewish lawyer, is what this Chinese guy said. He goes, your son's going to be a Chinese lawyer? Yep, I sent him to Cardoza to be a Jewish lawyer. Right? So, thinks that he goes to Cardoza to become a Jewish lawyer. And so he said, this guy gives money to shuls in Queens. He gives money. He says, the Jews, you guys are the best. So,
it's not just generous, just like God, like in the Holocaust, like Jews were like lawyers, bankers, people. So he didn't have
Very good. The Malbim says, Jews were known for wisdom, and therefore the king might not have been so quick to hurt them. Okay, the Abarbanel, you can look this up on the internet. He made a speech when King Ferdinand and Isabella kicked the Jews out in 1492. He made this beautiful speech saying, this is your misfortune, not ours. Spain is going down. Okay, without the Jews, you guys can become a third world country. And it's what happened. And only once that I know of in history, there was one guy in Poland, one leader, what's his name? Kamenetz, is like a city named Kamenetz, I forget what his name is now. And he invited the Jews to come in, because he studied history, and he saw every country the Jews were in. The economy went up, the trade was, but everything was good. So he invited the Jews, please come in, built up the country. Of course, it was later on that they kicked them out, But that particular monarch invited them in.
And in Egypt, when Amharic let the Jews go, he wanted to come back and realize that they're not doing anything by themselves.
Yeah. So this is one interpretation. The Vilna Gaon makes it more personal and just says he wouldn't have killed out the Jews because he felt he owed Mordechai for saving his life, so he's not going to kill his nation.
Oh, but did he not know about that until...
Yes, you could say that, but also you could say that he had forgotten about Mistama, he was told.
So why wouldn't he reward him then?
He forgot about it. That's why he reads it through the Sefer Zichronot. He says, I never rewarded him. But we're told that Esther told Ahasuerus in that Mordechai did it. We're told that, she said in his name.
Yeah.
That's why there's a very funny thing. People always say, you ever hear the phrase, Gemara says, Kol Omer Davar B'Shem Omro, maybe Ge'ula La'olam. Whoever says something in someone else's name brings Ge'ula to the world. Where do they learn it from? That Esther said in the name of Mordechai. I always say to people, well, who said that? I mean, wouldn't you think that you should say, Omer Rebbe Chanina, Kola Omer Dover B'Shem Omro? Maybe, isn't it so ironic? I ask people, no one knows who said it. Right? I forgot right now, I also forgot. I think it's Rebbe Chanina. It's a Gemara in Megillah, and it says Rebbe Chanina, I think that's the name. But I always find it so ironic that people say, listen, Kol Omer Dover B'Shem Omro, maybe Gulom. So, I'm going to quote the name of the Rosh. But say, Omer Rebbe Chanina, Kol Omer Dover B'Shem, I don't know. That's just my little pet peeve. Anyway, it's a little thing. But, now, in his anti-Semitic rhetoric that Shaul pointed out, the propaganda, we call us an Amachad Mifuzar. What's Mefuzar?
Dispersed.
Dispersed. So the Malbim says, many cities, distant from other people. The Vilna Gaon says, dispersed, no one will help them. The Ibn Ezra, they're not unified. the Al Sheikh, they won't even unify to defend themselves. Easy prey. Okay? And he says, Yikatev La'avdam. Now, what is La'avdam? Multiple meanings. And this is very important. One interpretation is, I think your Hebrew was, annihilate them. And that's the way the word is used in Devarim. But you should know, in another place in Devarim, that's in the beginning of Devarim, Perek Dalet. Perek Chav Chet, La'avdam means it should be exiled. Or slaves. Or assimilated. Or, you know, like losing their identity. This is what the Malvim says. Right? Basically, make religious decrees against them. But in the letter, Haman is very specific. He says, Lashmid, Larog, Laved. Totally annihilate the Jewish people. If this is true, that Ahasuerus only signed on to have, I don't know, some sort of religious rules against them, or not give them tax breaks, in other words, making them slaves to the and Haman actually decided that they should be annihilated, we could understand when Esther tells Ahasuerus what Haman did, he goes, I can't believe he did that. He says, Mihuzeh ve'ezehu, because Haman actually went against what they agreed upon. And this is one view, this is the Malbim's view, that Ahasuerus never signed on for the annihilation of the Jewish people, and Haman took it one step further with the king's signet ring. Or you could say, as many other Mefarshim do, you don't become the king of 127 countries by being a fool. Right? Even though, like, we often like in the children's books to portray Ahasuerus as like the bumbling king, sort of like the king from Aladdin, you know, doesn't know what's going on. Jafar, the bad guy, you know, he's Haman. He does whatever he wants. You know, no one's for Aladdin, just me. Anyway, I watched all the Disney movies with my kids. Anyway, Ahasuerus is like the king of 127 countries. He's probably not an idiot. And if so, he knew exactly who Haman had in mind. And according to the Gemara, that explains why he was mochel on the money. Haman says, listen, I got this personal project I want to take. I don't want to bother the king. I've raised the capital. I don't even need to dig into the treasury of the king. I just need your okay. And he says, you know what? I think your project's such a good idea. I'll cover the cost. You don't do that if you don't know what's going on. Right? The Gemara says, what was going on? It was sort of like one person had a big hole that he needed to fill. Another person had just dug out a big hole and needed a place for his dirt. And he says, and the guy with the hole says, can I buy your dirt? He says, take it for free. Thank you very much. Right? It was a zenenev, a zenochaser. Everyone got what they wanted. Ahasuerus wanted to do away with the Jews. He just didn't want to get his hands dirty. Now that Haman was going to do it, Ahasuerus was only too happy. Okay, now it's not politically correct to say this in Poland for sure. He could get arrested. But this guy Goldenhagen, he wrote this bestseller many years ago when I was in college, saying, talking about Hitler's willing accomplices. Hitler would never have been able to accomplish what he did if it wouldn't have been the willing accomplices in Poland and Ukraine and all these places. In other words, they were anti-Semites that just weren't motivated enough to actually do what Hitler did. With Hitler doing it, they were very happy that Hitler did this, and they aided him in ways that they could. Okay, this is, this is what's going on over here between Ahasuerus and Haman. And if so, aside from learning all these other positive messages, what do we also see here? Ahasuerus, in two prokin, turned from this big liberal to a genocidal maniac. And it's like the Hishamda that we're going to be saying soon. Every generation, we have to be careful because there's anti-Semitism is around the corner, and it can turn. It can turn in a moment. What?
When exactly was he liberal?
Oh, everyone's invited to the palace, and everyone can drink according to their rules and everything. Like, I'm going to make everyone happy. All right? And here's a guy who believes the propaganda, even though we've had loyal servants to the kings. Mordechai for him, Daniel for all the previous kings. He's believing the propaganda. The Jews, they can't be trusted. Right? The way Rabbi Wiles was talking earlier. Right? All Jews in America now, They have dual loyalties, right? This statement, this letter, certainly found a responsive chord. Because even though a second letter went out later, in Perek Tet, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, go out to fight against the Jews. So even with the second letter, where the kings basically said, I'm with the Jews, but you have permission to fight, they went out to fight. There was that much anti-Semitism. Right? The last point is maybe that we should realize, as formidable a foe Haman becomes, Ahasuerus is even worse. He's a person who's married to the law. Well, once I've sent out the letters, nothing I can do. So once there's a United Nations security resolution, what can be done? Right? Who cares if it's fair? Who cares if it makes any sense? We have the resolution. And that's the way Ahasuerus was, and he becomes a big problem. We'll see it later on. Haman's dead, and the Megillah is still continuing. What's it continuing? Should all be over? No. Ahasuerus is still on the scene. All right.